Yeah, that's interesting, though, Sylvia. Fascinating. Okay. All right. So today we are actually going to move on. But just before we move on, because I thought we finished with the Paraduma last week, I just want to do one small more thing that I found. And then we are going to move on to one. As I said at the beginning, Parshas Chukas is one of the most fascinating parashas in the Torah, as far as it has many, many stories. And the story that we're going to deal with today is Miriam passing away, and Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron hitting the rock, and therefore being punished that they can't go into the land. Interestingly enough, last week's parasha we read is connected, because we just read how Moshe was begging Hashem so many times, davening and entreating Hashem that he should be able to enter the land. But when was it decreed that he wasn't going to enter the land? That's what we're going to learn about today, when they actually hit the rock. But before we go there, I just want to show you. I'm just going to read you something. You have it in front of you. This is a very nice book, and I just wanted to show you two more insights into the Paraduma. It is written in English. So in front of you, you have two booklets. The booklet that looks like that has a page 223 on top. That's what we'll just read quickly first, the first two pages. So I'll just read this to you from the text. This is written so beautifully. This is from Rabbi Monk's book, and a beautiful book on the Chumash, and he gives a very nice insight, as we said, from Rav Hirsch on the Paraduma. It's always nice to see Rav Hirsch, always beautiful, always very deep. So he says like this: Rav Hirsch is not surprised that reasons for the Paraduma escape us, despite the fact that this is clearly a prominent commandment due to its extensive and detailed ritual. It deals with issues of purity and contamination, as we know, Tara and Tuma, issues which involve the spiritual realm and are inherently difficult for the human intellect to grasp. And we know that when it comes to Tuma and Tara, it's way beyond us. We say, as Jews, you know, like we wash our hands before eating bread, we wash our hands in the morning when we wake up, and we always explain that in truth, when it comes to mitzvahs of purity and impurity, we don't understand. It's not clean and unclean. We have to be very, very, very careful not to confuse the two, because it really has nothing to do. It's a spiritual concept, and that's why we don't really understand it. But as we said, nevertheless, we always want to have some insight, so let's see what he says. The Torah revealed only the part of the mitzvah which he could perform, but the essence of this mitzvah is rooted in a conception of the universe which will always remain beyond our intellectual powers because of its divine origin. So, very nice. But nevertheless, as we said, nonetheless, Rav Hirsch goes on to discuss some aspects of the law which give us a glimpse of the underlying ideas. So he says the two colors that represent the spectrum of human abilities are red and white. So red represents the physical, the animal drive, which is devoted to the will to live. And that's like blood, the fire, the passion. That's what red represents. White, on the other hand, is the image of purity, of the divine. Whereas the physical reality, represented by the color red, is ultimately perishable because it lacks the spiritual element, white encompasses all colors in a perfect harmony and is eternal. Okay, so that we understand. And now, what does that have to do with the cow? So we say, when confronting death, man experiences a spiritual risk. For at that moment, physical reality seems to take over and become all-powerful. Death presents man with the problem of his transience, his limited powers, his weakness. That's why we're all confronted by it. Mm-hmm. It is at that time when man confronts death and the force of nature represented by the color red, so what happens then, that the Kohen dressed all in white comes forth to reduce the red cow to ashes. It's said so beautifully. In so doing, he shows that the spiritual will always survive over the physical, and there is never an abdication of the spiritual in the face of death. We know that that is eternal. Our neshama is eternal. This, then, is the only time that the ashes of an animal are mixed with water to serve for the ceremony of sprinkling, because in all other cases, it is the animal's blood that is used to this effect. Apparently, the ashes demonstrate the abject end of the animal, right, as we understand, because it's burned, formerly resplendent with vigor and vitality. This symbol accentuates for us the fragility of material existence in order to draw our focus to the eternal and triumphant spiritual realm. Now, why is it water instead of blood on the ashes? So we see the ashes of this sacrifice transform impure to pure, whereas the Kayin who sprinkles them is transformed from his pure state to become impure. In that strange detail is found the essence of our human condition. Man, facing the challenges of his flesh, regains courage from the light of the spirit. However, the contact of the spirit with the physical often diminishes it and dilutes its integrity. So its strength, it's interesting, as we said, the one who is impure becomes pure because he's strengthened by the spiritual, but the spiritual can be a little bit affected by the physical, and therefore it diminishes a little bit, and that's why the Kayin does become impure, although only for a short little bit of time, and then he can repurify himself, only for one day, and then becomes pure again. Yet the quality of spirit, as he says, will eventually remove itself to reassume its initial form. The pure Kayin becomes temporarily impure, but is then ultimately repurified. So it's a very beautiful idea. And I just want to continue and understand why water, and it explains something else from Kabbalah, the Kabbalistic interpretation, identify the Parah Aduma with the physical force that reign outside the tabernacle, especially the kingdoms which have enslaved Israel over the centuries. So we're talking about all the negatives, all the negative nations, all the negativity in the world. That's the, so to speak, that's the impurity. As the Parah Aduma was reduced to ashes, which were then used in the ceremony to convert impure to pure, so will these external forces be brought under the power of good, which is very beautiful. That means that all the negativity in the world that we see as negative now, at the end, and through our engaging and doing mitzvahs and spreading goodness and kindness, we actually reduce the power of the impurity to ashes, and those ashes actually are used to help us. They purify us. So the negative becomes the assistant, so to speak, the aid to something good. Because we refine it just by engaging with it in the right way. And that's the idea. So then he goes on, he says the Parah Aduma was red, as we said, which is a color associated with Esav. It had, that's what Esav is. Remember, he said Esav was red. That's what it said when he was born. It's very No, but we're refining it all. It's all good. Let's see what he says. Never been the subject. And what Elchana, good morning. Oh, I'm so sorry. I don't have enough today. Boom today. Make another copy. We should sit, maybe sit near somebody where you can share, Hannah, better. No? You sure? Yeah. Sorry. Okay. He says, the Parah Aduma was red, a color associated with Esav. It had never been subjected to a yoke. Remember, he said we couldn't do work, demonstrating the free, this is interesting, a negative thing, demonstrating the freedom from moral restraints. It was perfect in its coloration, providing an allegory of total bestiality. So it's very negative in a sense. It was female, and we know that in Kabbalah, the female is din. And people don't realize that. People think women are very compassionate. It's all very nice. It's true. But women are gevura, and men are chesed. Funnily enough, the female is the gevura and the male. And the simple reason that we can relate to that is because when we think of chesed, kindness, as the good one, and gevura is severity and harshness and negative, no, they're both good. They're just very different. So chesed is the concept where you just pouring something, and it's like coming without any definition, without any limit, without any understanding of who's getting it. Whereas gevura, which means restraint, means that you take something, you define it, you categorize it, and therefore you limit it, right? You limit it so that the person who's accepting it can take it the way they can. That's what a woman does, right? The female, it's not really woman, it's more the feminine aspect. The feminine aspect of something, if just on a simple level, takes the baby and it develops in the womb for 9 months, right? Out comes a child. From the potential becomes a child. But the child is very defined, very limited in a way, but defined. It's the only way it could work. But on a simple level, you walk into a home, who's the one? I mean, in some homes it's different, but the feminine energy is the one that organizes the home. That, as we say, the ultimate balabasta. Who's the ultimate balabasta? The one who can chuck, who can throw things out because it's not needed. The one who's keeping everything, well, the home is not going to be an organized home. So the ability to divide and to discern and to categorize
And therefore, to limit what comes in so that things actually work and operate and practically can work, that's the feminine energy. So feminine energy is gevura. That's gevura. Gevura is where you are constraining, where you are defining and limiting, but for the sake that it should actually be workable, as we say. Because if, as we say, if we never threw anything out, well, you couldn't live in your house. That's how it would be. So the feminine aspect is what we call gevura, and the male aspect is chesed. As we know, and this is a very important Torah idea, feminine and masculine, both men and women contain both aspects. It's not exclusively men that have the male aspect and women that have the feminine. We contain both, just that one is more dominant than the other. And certain women might even have male aspects more dominant. That doesn't make them less of a woman. That's just the way they are. But the point over here is that we're talking about gevura being, as you say, that feminine aspect. And therefore he says like this, that's why the cow, it was a female, right? This paraduma. And therefore associated with the divine quality of din. And here he translates harsh judgment. What happens, he says, the prophet Malachi declares, and you shall tread down the wicked, for they shall be ashes under your feet. These ashes represent contamination. When the water, so we said we used water, when the water of purification are poured over them, the contamination of the ashes is changed to purity. And the factor of din is overcome by the factor of love, chesed. Just as water, and water is chesed, extinguishes fire, fire is gevura, so are the savagery and wickedness of the nations extinguished by the beneficial waters that Israel provides. But to take it a little bit step further, so this is talking about extinguishing, but sometimes you can have where the chesed actually combined with the din what makes the best combination that could happen. That's where we get to Tiferes. So in other words, when you have the feminine and the masculine aspect working together, it's not that you want to eradicate the feminine aspect, not at all. You want to use what's positive about it, and that's what happens. And that's why it can, what are used, the ashes, the actual ashes, is what is used to purify people afterwards, which is quite incredible. So the Kohen who mixed the water of purification becomes contaminated, as if he had taken on the evil of the wicked nations in order to convert it to goodness. Evil is necessary as a means to provide the conversion to goodness. The ashes of the paraduma, representing contamination, were needed as a means to provide purification. Where the contamination of death appears, purity can be recovered through the procedure of the paraduma. However, it is not to be used wherever death is not accompanied by contamination. And this is a very beautiful thing because it's going to lead us on to our part. What do we mean? All death, we say, is impurity, but no. There is one category of death that doesn't have any form of impurity. And what is that? A tzaddik. When a tzaddik passes away, there is no contamination, so to speak, because since the tzaddik has refined his entire physical self, so everything is pure, his whole self is pure, and therefore doesn't cause any impurity at all. That's very limited. I mean, there's very few people who fit into that category, but we're going to see today that's Miriam. Miriam, when she passes away, there's nothing impure. She was a pure tzaddikus, and we're going to see talk about her in a minute. But let's just quickly finish this one more line here. It says, like a few more lines here. The Zohar relates that when Shimon bar Yochai explained these concepts, Reb Abba was so gratified and overwhelmed that he stood up and went over to kiss him. So then there's a thing about tefillin. Okay, that's all we're going to read for that. Now, just wanted to say that's all for that. Okay, beautiful. Now, leading on to today. So today, we're going to now go back to your other booklet because I want to see the psukim. So what we're going to do is we are going to read the psukim inside and then we're going to go back to understanding it in depth. This, as I said, is one of the, how do you say it? I don't even know how to explain the story. You will see. It's one of, in a way, the saddest story. One of the saddest, not the saddest, but one of the very sad stories in the Chumash. Because as we said, we know that because of this story, Moshe and Aaron didn't go into the land of Israel. And even before that, what we see in our psukim is who else didn't enter the land of Israel is Miriam. Just quickly to put in context, when did this happen? This story takes place. What we are going to read now is in the 40th year in the desert, the end, literally the end. Everybody from the generation who had sinned at the spies have passed away already. Everybody who's left are the people of the generation who are going in, who are going to all enter into the land of Israel, there are only three people left who have to pass away, unfortunately, and that is Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam. Interestingly, and this is something so fascinating, women didn't die. The women went into the land. And actually it says, I don't know, this seems to be a miraculous thing, that the 40 years in the desert, no woman died. But the only one that did die was Miriam. Unfortunately, she wasn't destined to enter the land of Israel. She also remained in the Midbar, just like her two brothers. She led the woman in the desert and out of Egypt. She was incredible, but now she had to pass away. And we say an interesting thing, and we know that the water was because of Miriam, the Be'er, the well, and that's why they complain about the water, and that's why Moshe Rabbeinu hits the rock. But we'll get to that in a minute. But just something very beautiful, we say that Miriam, she passes away here. When is this? What date is this? When does this happen? So we say the 40th year. You know, in Torah, we count the year from Nisan. So Miriam is the first of the three to pass away. And according to most opinions, she passed away on the 10th of Nisan, which is just the beginning of the 40th year, just before Pesach. And then 2 months later, her brother passes away. 3 months, is it? Nisan, it's Nisan Iyar Sivan Tammuz, and then Rosh Chodesh Av is when we say Aaron, her brother, passes away. And that's also in the parasha we'll see later. And then we know Zion Adar, which is a few months later, her brother Moshe passes away. So they lose, it's actually quite an incredible thing to think, what they've lost that year, quite sad. But we know that Hashem doesn't leave the people without a leader. And Moshe has already chosen Yahushua to lead the Jewish people into the land of Israel, and the people are aware of that. So they do have a leader, and they do have direction, and of course Aaron's sons, and they have people who are going to lead them into the land of Israel. Okay, but let's see now in the Pesukim.
So do you think, do you think that the resurrection, that the three of them will be there to bring in the resurrection?
Yeah, so that's what the many commentaries say. That's one of the reasons they did pass away there, was they should remain with the people in the desert to bring them back into the land of Israel. And they will be there to lead us in. They definitely will. And part of their being out of Israel symbolizes us who, unfortunately, even though they did go in, but they only spent 850 years in total in Israel. And aside from that, they were out of Israel, right? It's less than that, 410 and 420. So it's like 830 years. It's a little more, because 850 years at the beginning and then 420 years second base. And besides that, we've been in Golus. We've been in exile. So most of our years were not in the land of Israel, and definitely not self-ruled in the land of Israel, right? We weren't autonomous. Even in the time of the second base Hamikdash, we were under the Greeks, under the Syrians, under the Romans. You know, it was terrible. It wasn't like we had our own country that we could run on our own. So it's not been so easy. So Moshe and Aaron and Miriam are there, symbolic of leaders who are there with us in Golos, in exile, but definitely for their people in that generation. Yeah. Okay, let's see the Pesukim. So I'll show you. So let's see the Pesukim, and then we're going to understand it more in depth, because it's actually very beautiful, the story. So this is Perek Chof in Parshas Bamidbar, as we see. Vayavoyu b'nei Yisrael kol ha'eda midbar tzin. So and every word is exact, and we're going to actually analyze all the words, but now let's just read through the Pesukim. The Jewish people, the b'nei Yisrael, arrived, came, vayavoyu, kol ha'eda, the entire assembly. Where did they come? To Midbar Tzin, that's the place, the wilderness of Tzin. This is very close to the border where they're going to be entering the land of Israel. B'chodesh HaRishon, in the first month, V'yeshev Ha'am, and the nation settled in a place called Kadesh. And what happens there? It tells us, V'tamas Sham Miriam, Miriam passed away there, V'tikaver Sham, and she was buried there. So we see an interesting thing in this pasuk. She passed away there, and she was buried there. Before we go further, I just want to look at Rashi. Kol ha'eda seems extra. It says the Jewish people, B'nai Yisrael, and then it says kol ha'eda, the entire assembly. So he says, why the repetition? Eda hashlema, the whole assembly. Shekvar mesu misei midbar, for those who were to die in the wilderness had already died. Ve'elu pershu l'chayim, and these who composed the assembly were set apart for life. This is the whole assembly who are going to enter into the land of Israel. Okay? Vatamas Sham Miriam. Miriam died there. So the famous question, Miriam, why is the passage of Miriam's death juxtaposed Leparshas Parah Aduma with the passage of the red cow, Loimer Lach, to tell you, Ma Karbanos Mechaprin, just as offerings atone, Af Misas Tzadikim Mechaperes, so too does the death of the righteous ones. This was a kapara. Interesting that they still needed more atonement before they could enter the land. It sounds quite like she has to go so that they should be atoned. But as we know from Moshe, and Aaron and Miriam had the same thing, that their whole life they lived for the people. They didn't live for themselves. They were so devoted that they were willing, in a sense, to depart if the people needed an atonement, and that would be enable them to enter into the land of Israel. I just want to see, what does he say about, very beautiful, that Tamas Shum Miriam. The word Shum is extra because it says she died there and she was buried there. It didn't have to say there twice. So he says, why does it say twice? So he says, Af hi b'neshika mesa. She too died through a kiss. And now let's just see, what does that mean, through a kiss? If you look at, I think it's number 6, right? On the bottom, there's a note. Let me just see if it says it here by number 6. Yes. So it says, death by a kiss, as it were, means death directly through Hashem without the intercession of the angel of death. So this is a very high level, we don't understand what this means, but this is a way that only a tzaddik passes away. And the Gemara discusses a little, it says, alternatively, it means that the soul becomes united with the holiness of the Shekhinah. So it's so united with the holiness of the Shekhinah, it's like, it just wants to join. It just wants to be one with God, and it departs from the body. And the example that it gives on top, it says, it's like the most desirable form of death, likening it to pulling a hair from milk, which means that there's no resistance. That is, the soul leaves the body without resistance. I mean, how does this happen? So Reb Tzadok HaKohen explains that to the extent that people sin in life and establish a bond between their souls and the pleasures of this world, it becomes increasingly more difficult for them to part from physical life. For those who become totally attached to physicality, right, then it's like, he says, the sages liken death to pulling embedded thistles from a sheep's wool, which is very difficult. But from those of the stature of Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam, whose soul remains pure throughout their earthly sojourn, there is no effort, no regret, and no pain when the soul is reunited with its source. And this is a very big thing. In other words, for the people left behind, it is sad. And they miss her, obviously, terribly. And we'll see, they miss her in every way. But for her, she's happy because she is where she wants to be. Her soul is united with God in the place that it wants to be. So that's also important to remember, because it does sound a bit tragic, and it is a little bit tragic, but she didn't get to go into the land of Israel. But from Miriam's perspective, she was very happy to be in the higher realm, living a spiritual life at this point. Okay, so just to understand, yes, Sylvia, sure.
The other spy with Yehoshua, Kalev, was he privileged to enter?
Yes, Kalev definitely entered the land. Those two, those were the two leaders from the generation who were lucky enough to go in. The only ones. Yeah, but all the women did go in.
Yes.
Don't forget, only Miriam didn't, which is interesting. Okay.
It seems like the women keep the nation going.
That's what it says. That's our job now, too. Yes. Yep, 100%. All right. Okay, let's see now. I'm thinking if I should go further or talk about Miriam's... You know what? Let's do two more psukim, and then I'm going to come back to this. One more pasuk. The Lahaya Mayim La'eda. This is really all to set the tone of what the next thing is. And there was no water for the assembly. Vayikalu, see it's on page 237, it's Pasuk Beis. Vayikalu al Moshe v'al Aaron, and they gathered together. And look how it says al, and they translate against. So you can tell that they're coming with a complaint. They're coming to Moshe and Aaron. There's no water. Let's read another Pasuk and we'll see what happens. Vayarev ha'amim Moshe. So first they come to Moshe and Aaron, but then, look what it says, they're only really arguing. They quarreled with Moshe, Vayomru Lamar, and spoke up saying, Vilu gavanu bigva achenu lifnei Hashem. If only we had perished by the demise of our brothers before Hashem. In other words, what's going to happen to us now? We're in a desert, there's no water. We're going to die of thirst. It's the worst kind of death, the most suffering, painful death. Halavai, we should have died the way our brothers died earlier, whether it be in Egypt or whatever it may be, or other plagues that happened throughout the 40 years. Now what's going to be with us? It's amazing. You would think that these people are the ones going into the land of Israel, that they had already calmed down. But not, it's. But just again, one important thing to remember before we go further in the story. When you have a nation of people, we're talking about 600,000 men, about 3 million people, women, children, right? There are many, many people here. They are in a desert. And lest we think that they are in a desert which has nice people around them, we could just think of Israel now, nobody's nice around them. Nobody is helping them. As we know, we've already learned. When they asked Edom if they can go through, no, even if we'll pay you, you know, the highest tourist dollar, they don't want us, right? No, we're not giving you anything. In other words, to them, this well that had just disappeared, obviously, that we'll see that's why they're complaining, was their life force. If any of us would go through a stage where we would be in a desert and have no water, we would also lose ourselves. It's just, it's impossible to live without water. That's not, it's not food, food also, but water for sure not. So it's we have to understand them, not to judge them over harshly in the sense that you think, oh my gosh, what's wrong with them? It was a very big crisis. That's what it was. It was massive. And the crisis was so big. And where was Moshe and Aaron when there wasn't water? What were they doing? What had just happened? So what were they doing? They're sitting Shiva. Remember, their sister just passed away. They're in their tent and they're sitting Shiva. Now, what happens if somebody's sitting Shiva? The world doesn't exist. They just lost their dear sister. Don't forget, Miriam's not just anybody. I mean, everybody's sister is not anybody. A sister is a sister. It's not replaceable. They're sitting Shiva. This sister Miriam, Miriam was one that saved Moshe when he was thrown into, she almost raised, like, you can't, the connection is beyond. They are sitting there, and what do they expect? Imagine what they're thinking. What should be happening when they're sitting Shiva? Moshe and Aaron are sitting Shiva. What would you imagine? We all know if somebody important in the community is sitting Shiva, well, the house is full. You can't even get through the door, right? That's what happens, right? The simple people, the normal people like us, we say, oh, I don't know, nobody's coming. But Moshe and Aaron, people don't stop coming. But nobody came. Nobody came to be Menachem Avil. They see people starting to come. What do they think? The first thought is, they're coming to be Menachem Avil. That's what they thought. Exactly what Aaron thought for sure. And Moshe as well. As they approached, they could see that there was something different. You can see on the faces that there was something different. And there's a big question. Why didn't they come to be Menachem Avil? Where were they? This is their Miriam. This is Moshe and Aaron. What's going on? So it's a very simple thing. What happened was that Miriam passed away. And you saw how we read it? She passed away. She was buried there. That's what it says. She passed away there. She was buried there. They did like in Israel. You know, in Israel, if anybody passes away in Yerushalayim, in a minute they're buried, right? You can have day, night. You don't even know. Nobody would even know they passed away and they're already buried. It's honorable. It's actually the Jewish way. It's more honorable for the dead person. Miriam was buried very quickly after she passed away, to the point that many people weren't even aware. How did they become aware? Because what stopped? The water stopped. So before they had a chance to process the loss that Miriam's gone, they have a massive crisis on their hand. They don't have water. The babies are crying. They're thirsty. What should they do? So you see what's happening. So that's why, before they even have a chance to think about Miriam's passing and what Moshe and Aaron are going through, they're already at a crisis. And that's why it unfolds this way. It's important to understand how it works. So this is what's happening here. Okay, before we go further, I just want you to look at the other page. I just want to show you something beautiful, just because, and we're going to get into the story very, very nicely, but I just want to show you a few beautiful ideas. I know, I think we want, when I was looking, it looked very familiar, so I apologize if we've done this. There's a beautiful thing about Miriam's well, because we understand why they're approaching, because the well is gone. Why did the well go? Because it was there in the merit of Miriam. And now that Miriam's gone, the well is gone, right? That's what happens. What's the story? Why did the well come in the merit of Miriam? That's the first question. What's that well have to do with Miriam? Why is it her merit that brings about the water?
The Medrash says,
what did she do? She stood by the Nile, right? When Moshe's basket was there, and when Batya found him, she was watching him in the water. She's very connected to water. But more than that, women are connected to water because we purify ourselves through the water, all through the generations. That's what Jewish women did. Miriam is saved Moshe through the water, and now, in her merit, the water came. Well, she passes away, now the water is gone, right? Okay, so I want to just know something about the water. So look at your other booklet, the one that you were looking before when we were reading in the English. I'll show you something nice there. Okay, just see something. One more thing about Miriam also. Do you remember by the splitting of the sea, she sang and danced with the woman, right? So also because she praised the miracle of the splitting of the sea, that's also why she merited to have the water in her merit. That's what it says. Another interesting thing, it says, we know that the water came out of a rock initially. Some people say the rock traveled with them in the desert, and then every time that they would camp somewhere, what would happen is that the Chachamim would talk to this rock and say, water come out, water come out. And then the water would come streaming forth, and there was all these rivers and whatever, streams, and everybody was able to access the water. It was there in her merit, but it was coming out of this rock, and that's what will lead to the rock that's going to happen over here. But another beautiful thing it says also is that it was actually created, one of the things that were created at twilight, Bein HaShemashos, on the sixth day of creation, was Miriam's well, the potential for Miriam's well. It's a miraculous thing, that's what it is. It's not just a natural thing, it's a miraculous thing. To have such water in the desert is miraculous, and the way it followed them, and the way it was always there wherever they were. I just want to see one more thing before we go further. I want to show you something beautiful, but okay, so then comes the question, what happened to Miriam's well? What happened to it? So the rock, as we know, okay, so it disappears. But according to such a beautiful Medrash, it says it didn't really disappear totally. There's two opinions the Medrash tells us. It's written in the Gemara, a whole discussion. It says, if you go up on a certain mountain and you look over the Mediterranean, on one side you might be able to catch a glimpse of some of the water of Miriam's well. But according to most opinions, not the Mediterranean, the Kinneret. If you go in Tveria and you stand on a certain rock, which we don't know where, but the Arizal knew apparently, and you stand at a certain angle and you look at a certain time, you will be lucky enough to see the waters of Miriam's well. And not only that, but there's one time of the week that we can all access Miriam's well. So on your page, you see there's a page that looks like it has a number one in the middle. In the commentary booklet. Yeah, the one that had the English. So go to the third page. Just before that. There's a number one. And in there, I'm just going to read you. So yeah, that's it. This is actually fascinating. This is a Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch means a code of Jewish law, right? That means an instruction. Look what this is in Hilchas Shabbos, which actually is, this section is talking about Matzah Shabbos. So what it talks about Avdallah, and then it says like this. K'tzas noyagim lidlois mayim b'chol Matzah Shabbos. Some people have a custom to draw water every Matzah Shabbos. Either from the well or from the springs, whatever it is outside. You know, in those days, they would go and draw water, fresh water, Matzah Shabbos. And actually, somewhere else it writes clearly that when the men were in shul, davening Ma'ariv, the woman would go to the well and draw water at that time from the well, fresh water. Usually you don't do that at night, but they would dafka do that on Matzah Shabbos. Why? Lefi she'amru chachamim, she'be'era shel Miriam, she'hi biyoma shel Tveria, that the well of Miriam, which is in the sea by Tveria, which is the Kinneret, he machzeres b'chol Matzah Shabbos, returns every Matzah Shabbos, al kol ha'be'erais v'hamayonais. Actually, obviously, this is a spiritual idea, but it's just a beautiful concept. Somehow, the water that's always there in the Kinneret from Miriam somewhere gets touches all the waters and all the wells all over the world only at one time of the week, Matzah Shabbos. And what happens? And the Chol Misha Pegeyaba, anybody who touches it, in other words, anybody who's able to access it, Vishoise Mimeneha, and drinks from the water, Misrape Miyad Mikol Tachluav, is immediately healed from all their illnesses. And that's why people have the custom, Lidlais B'chol Matzah Shabbos, to actually draw every Matzah Shabbos. Ki ulai, maybe they'll be lucky. Yizdamnu lahem mi be'era shel Miriam. Who knows? If they won't have the mazel that the water that they draw from the well on Matzah Shabbos will actually have some of the water of Miriam's well, and that will give healing. Now, before we go further, just a practical thing that many people, I don't know if you've seen it, many people do have the custom, you know, to take actually fresh water on Matzah Shabbos, and most people have the custom to have boil it and have a cup of tea, whatever it is. I don't know if you ever saw that at home. Some people say in honor of Milav and Malka, but it's actually to do with, they say, Miriam's well. Some people actually call it Miriam's Brunnen, the well of Miriam, to drink fresh water, not the water that has been heating all of Shabbos, like that's left in the urn, but to take fresh water, because as we say, freshly taken water on Matzah Shabbos and drink it, and it, who knows, has healing properties, you never know. Now, it's very interesting. This is like it's obviously not, we're not getting Miriam's water in a sense, but somehow we're accessing something to do with Miriam's well on Matzah Shabbos. This is, this that I quoted from you is from the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, the Alter Rebbe's Shulchan Aruch. The original Shulchan Aruch says it. The Ramah, who is the Ashkenazi one who writes, who adds his little things, he says, I never saw anybody actually keep this custom. That's what he writes there. So some people don't keep that custom. But here, the Alter Rebbe didn't put that in. So some people do keep the custom. But it's a very beautiful idea. And as you can see, there is incredible power to the water of Miriam even until today. That's the idea. Miriam's well is eternal. What she did for the people in the desert for 40 years is not just for the people in the desert for 40 years. We are still accessing that water up until today. Maybe, perhaps, we can say Shabbos is a time that we get inspired, that's supposed to give us the strength for the whole week. And now comes Matzah Shabbos, we make Havdalah, and it's a little bit dark, and it's hard to face the week, and who knows what the week will bring. And we're back in the world, you put the phone back on, and you see what the world, what's happening, and it's a little bit challenging and daunting. So perhaps we take this fresh water, and we say, we will reattach, so to speak, to Miriam, who has given strength to the woman, as we say, in the time of the desert, but women for all generations, that we should never feel overwhelmed by what's going to come this week. Hashem will provide strength, and we will have water to drink. We will have strength to face the week. So whatever it may be, some people actually have the practical custom to do it. Everybody can do what they choose, but it's a fascinating idea. And we see that this is connected. It's an eternal thing connected to Miriam all the way from that time. There was a cute story, not cute, but an interesting story that's written. I want to see if I can find it. I didn't give it to you, but it was in the thing about the Arizal, that there was once where the Arizal was walking with his student, Reb Chaim Vital, and they lived in Sfat, right? And they were walking near Tveria, and he looked outside on the Kinneret, and he actually pointed out and he said, that water is the water of Miriam. But then the story also goes dates back, and he says that in the time of the Gemara, it's actually a sad story in a way, but in the time of the Gemara it was very known, and there was a woman who went out to draw water from the well, and her husband was at home, and he had some kind of boils, like shchin. He had a skin ailment. She took a little bit of time, whether she was talking to her friends or just took her extra time. She came home a little bit late, and he got angry. So he knocked over the jug that she had brought from the thing. And he broke it, and most of the water was lost. But a few drops of the water went onto his skin. And wherever the water contacted, that part of the skin actually was healed. In a way, it shows him that he shouldn't have gotten angry because he could have had a full healing. But the bottom line is that the water was powerful. This water had obviously accessed Miriam's water. It was, and somehow it could. So that's the source of this whole idea. But it's just a very beautiful concept, which leads us, as we're saying, to what the Jewish people must have felt. Again, setting the tone for us to understand the devastation that they felt when Miriam passed away, and more than that, the fact that now they don't have water. Now, one other beautiful, so now, if you look, keep on the same sheet, go to the next page, I'm going to show you something nice here. I'm going to show you how the Aruch Haim HaKadosh explains it so beautifully. So this is number three. Do you see it says number three near it? So I should make it to the Shvara on the next page. The Aruch Haim. So Aruch Haim says, remember we started and we said that the Jewish people arrived in this spot in the Midbar, and it calls them Vayavoyu B'nei Yisrael, right? It calls them the Jewish people by the name B'nei Yisrael. We know that the Jewish people in the Chumash have many different ways that they're called. Sometimes they're called B'nei Yisrael. Sometimes they're called Am, like the nation. The nation's not such a good way. That sometimes connotes a negative, like when they're not on such a high level. When we're called Bnei Yisrael, that's like when we're good. You know, that's why we're associated, like the children of Yaakov. You know, we're behaving and we're good. So he says a beautiful thing. If you look at the third paragraph, he says V'kan. V'kan ha'idia ha'kosuv, ki kol ha'eda yeshnam begeder zeh sheyikru b'nei Yisrael. So here the pasuk is telling us that the entire congregation that's here are on a level that could be actually referred to as b'nei Yisrael, meaning to say that they are holy. V'hu maimer v'yavoyu b'nei Yisrael kol ha'eda perish kulam nikra'im b'shem Yisrael. They're all called by the name Yisrael. Begeder yisharim v'tzadikim. They are on the level of righteous people. This is number three. Then we says, I want to skip to the next paragraph. Why is it important to tell us this? The hakavana b'haydazu. The reason that it's telling us is for three reasons. The first reason, aleph, lefishu aimer b'somuch ma'isem me'meriva. Because now, what are we leading to? We're telling that these people have come to this spot and Miriam passes away. And then we come to the story of Moshe hitting the rock, right? So we might think, and we'll see soon, as we said, when the people approached Moshe and Aaron, right? They were complaining, right? They said, oh, we should have died in the desert. And you can see that they're, it doesn't sound like they're so amazing in a sense. I mean, we understand why they're doing it, but still, it's quite harsh. So he says like this. Why, so therefore, in order to tell us, Shene'enash Moshe al Yadim, and we know that it was through this story that Moshe Rabbeinu was punished, so he was punished through them. She'amar lahem shimuna ha'mayru, Moshe Rabbeinu says to them, listen, you rebels, la'zehikdim la'hidiyacha, that's why the Pasuk tells us first, ki kol ha'eda hayu tzadikim, really they were all righteous. V'zuhaysa siba she'enash Moshe. And we're going to talk about this more next week. This is one of the reasons Moshe was so harshly punished. Because what did he do? Shekaram Mayrim. He called the Jewish people rebels. And here we're starting the perek and telling us they weren't rebels. They were righteous. They're Bnei Yisrael. So this is Moshe's, how do you say it? A little bit, yeah. Well, he's a little bit upset. Okay, he gets angry and he shouldn't have. Yeah, he's fed up, exactly right. That's the word. Okay. Beis lahagdil ma'at. Also, why else? What's another reason that it sets the tone and tells us that everybody is so righteous? This is a very beautiful thing. Because what does it tell us? Lahagdil ma'ilas Miriam alei hashalom. So we are, see that big number three? So in the second column. So right, there's a that's by one. And then go to the next column and there's a beis. And right near it tells us the greatness of Miriam. Aleha Hashalim, Shagam Shekol Ha'eda Hayut Tzadikim. Even though the entire congregation were righteous, as we're saying, Bnei Yisrael, Loi Amatz Chusam Lahamid Lahem Be'er Hamayim. Nevertheless, there's so many of them, 3 million people there, righteous people, and yet there wasn't enough merit in all of them that there should be a well. Who was the well in the merit of? Miriam. And when she passes away, it disappears immediately. They're all so righteous. But she's even more righteous than all 3 million of them. That's what it's showing us. It's showing us the greatness of Miriam. That she was way beyond all of them. And it was in her merit that the well was there. And then when she passes, the well disappears. Okay, it does come back. Amisha makes a plan. But nevertheless, she is so special that even though all these people are tzaddikim, when she passes, it makes a big mark. There's a massive loss. She's gone. And that means it's a massive loss of something, a great spiritual light. As he says, Shehayu b'schus Miriam, which was in the merit of Miriam. And the third thing that it's telling us, Al-Pi Divrayim, She'amru she'Yisrael lo'holchu. Because what do we say? We say that when the Jewish people went to Moshe Rabbeinu, right, they approached him. So they approach. This is what we mentioned before, and I'll just tell you this orally. I know we just said it before. So this is to tell us that when the Jewish people are coming, we wonder something interesting. We think maybe they're approaching Moshe and Aaron because they want to be Menachem Avil, right? They want to do the mitzvah. And he uses the word Gmilas Chesed. It's interesting, for Nicham Avelim, which people don't think of it as such, but it is. It's the biggest kindness when you can, when you go to somebody and try to comfort them and be with them in this terrible time. Well, the people didn't go, we know. Why didn't they go? Because we said they didn't know, and by the time they knew, the water was already gone. But that's why when they first started to approach, Moshe and Aaron think that's why they're coming. But the other thing is interesting. That's also why Moshe and Aaron didn't do anything about the well until the people came. Because perhaps they weren't even aware. Because they're in the tent, just sitting there crying. What? Yes, exactly. So they don't know that there's no water out there. They don't know the well disappeared because they were sitting Shiva. So it's actually very interesting. It just makes us understand how the story unfolds. But the people didn't mean bad. They would have come to be if they would have known, but then this crisis unfolded. And now Moshe has to figure out a way how to deal with the people. Okay, I just want to show you one more. What? Sure. Okay, so very interesting thing, Sylvia. The truth is like this. We say that we had the three special miracles in the desert, the man, the clouds of glory, and the well. The well was Miriam. The clouds of glory were in the merit of Aaron. And the man was in the merit of Moshe Rabbeinu. Now, when Miriam passed away, she's the first one to pass away. As we said, they didn't enter the land of Israel for another year after that. So what happened? So it says, interesting thing, that after, we'll see at the end of this story, Moshe brings back the well in his merit. But it does disappear for a while. He has to work hard to get it back. In other words, she had a deep connection to that well. And there is actually, it's a very important thing that it should disappear so that people realize. Because one of the things that the commentaries tell us, and this is unfortunate in life, we experience this, that people weren't even aware that it was in her merit until she passed away and it disappeared. And when it disappeared, then they realized why they had had it. So you see, sometimes in life that's how it is. We just take for granted things are happening and we don't actually realize that it's, you know, somebody good is around us. You know, there's somebody until, unfortunately, sometimes until it's too late. So many people didn't even know that it had to do with Miriam. And this was important for them to, yes, become aware. But yes, Sylvia, it does come back in the source of Moshe. He is able to, but it's a hard work for him to get it back. Because really, he was very connected to Miriam. Yeah.
Feminine.
Well, it's interesting, not really, because water is chesed, but it doesn't matter. But she had a special connection to the water, as we say. So, and the truth is that women bring life, like water brings life. So, women and sustain, and the sustenance also, it said, talks about the fact that women give the sustenance to the people. Actually, a fascinating thing, it said, remember, we said that her passing is mentioned right after the story of the Paraduma, because just like the Paraduma provides atonement, so too the death of Miriam provided atonement. And the idea is that the Paraduma, we said, what's the idea? That it provides atonement really for the sin of the golden calf. Remember, we explained because the Paraduma is like the mother cow, should come and clean up the mess that the child, that her child made, the calf made, right? So too, the mother is always there to sustain and provide for her young. And this is what Miriam did. She was like the mother of the Jewish people in that sense. And therefore, now when she passes, so there's that loss. But what we realize as we look back is that she, throughout her life, provided atonement for the Jewish people in the sense of providing their sustenance, all of that, all the things that they needed, not just physically, but spiritually as well. And that's a very big thing. Actually, the Kli Yakar tells us that it's not just Miriam that it says that she also, that her death comes near a concept of atonement. Aaron also, and Aaron's sons. Remember, Aaron's sons passed away, and it says when they passed away, it was also an atonement for the people. An interesting thing, I just want to see, it's a very beautiful idea. It says that each one in a different way. So Aaron, it says actually Aaron passed away, and it says near his passing, there's two times that it mentions in the Chumash. One of the times it's mentioned near the concept of the clothing of the Kohen Gadol, of the Kohanim, and one of the time it has to do with the breaking of the Luchais. And just like the breaking of the Luchais also provided atonement, so too Aaron's death provides atonement. What's the connection? Because we know that what does a tzaddik do? A tzaddik teaches us what to do and what not to do, right? Gives us the direction, how to look, you know, to interpret the Torah. And the breaking of the Luchais, as we know, was similar to the death of a tzaddik in the sense where you have a loss, a breaking of that ability to know what to do, what not to do, right? We're breaking the Luchais. That's why that's connected. And when we talk about the big day kahuna, what else does a tzaddik do? A tzaddik doesn't just tell us what to do spiritually, but he also provides protection physically, just like clothing provide protection from the bad weather, from the sun or the cold. In the same way, when a tzaddik is around, there is protection for the people. So when the tzaddik leaves, we sort of lose that, right? So it's to show us all of these things that we should remember and value what the tzaddik is providing. And interestingly, the sons of Aaron, it says that right after they passed away, we talk about Yom Kippur, because we know just like Yom Kippur provides atonement, well, tzaddikim definitely provide atonement. So always to remember and value while we have them, not only to have to realize when they pass away. But anyways, it's all a very interesting idea. I think we'll stop over here. And what we're going to do next week is we're going to continue, because this story, we're going to read the story, and we have to understand a lot of things. What Moshe Rabbeinu did wrong, because it was such a harsh punishment, not going into the land of Israel. We're going to analyze that more deeply to understand the sin, what Moshe and Aaron did, what should they have done, how should they have reacted, and what actually happened. So Mirza Hashem, next week we'll see more.
Thank you.